Is that better? Okay, so welcome to the OMIS Working Group session. For the benefit of the people who are listening on recording, I'm Heidi Dempsey, and Mike Patton is the system engineer for this working group. We're going to be following the OMIS agenda that's posted on the wiki page, so if you're online, you can look at the presentations and the agenda there. And now, whoops. You can almost see it. Okay. I don't know why it's doing that. Just a sec. Okay, well, I have three slides, and it looks like the left-hand side of them is going to be cut off. So luckily, I'm only talking for 5 minutes. So the agenda bashing, first part of the meeting. What we're proposing to discuss is to go through for networks, operations, and security, the state of integration for all of the Spiral 1 Genie projects. So if you're from one of those projects and you see the status that's put up here and you don't think that it's correct, please interrupt us during the meeting. Don't wait until afterwards and come up and talk to us, because the whole point of this session is to try and get an accurate view for everybody in Genie to understand where integration is. So Mike Patton and John Paul Heron and Steve Schwab are going to present each of the sections that they worry about for OMIS. The next thing that we're going to do after that is have some open discussion about sort of the next big design problems that we're working on in OMIS. So the first design problem wasn't really even a design problem. It was just find out who all the projects are and what they have to do to integrate and whether we could collect data from them and whether we could sort of formulate a beginning security statement for each of them. And you're going to start to see some of the results of that here. There's also documents that are on the project web pages for security and for the operations GMOC, which are longer versions of those same statements. And I'd encourage you to read them if you haven't seen them already. There have been multiple versions of them. There's very little comment that we've gotten back so far, either in person or on the mailing list. So it's really important that you look at those, because those are going to become the policies for the Genie network. And if you don't speak up and tell us what's wrong with them now, then it's going to be more painful to find out later. So please do try and take some time to look at those documents. And stop us in the hallways or anything. You know, let us know what you think about them, even if it's just based on what we say here in the meeting and you haven't had time to read the documents yet. We're proposing to talk about emergency shutdown, some of the data sharing, and some of the issues that have to do with distributed authorization for letting people access Genie or letting people access control frameworks. Obviously, a lot of these issues overlap with things that are discussed in Substrate and things that are discussed in Control Framework. So the fact that they're showing up here is because they have a component that's critical to some of the projects and integration that we're trying to do here, not because what we're saying is a different solution than what's being said in some of the other working groups. So we're hoping that everybody's solutions get integrated along the way, too. But if you see differences or if it's confusing, let us know. And then the last part is lightning talks, which are anybody who's here who wants to stand up and give people an update on what they're doing or if they have tools that are good for operations or data sharing. And there's one person already, Jen Leisure, who has said that she'd like to brief everybody on what is happening with the regionals. Is there anybody else in the room who would like to do anything for a lightning talk? Any status, anybody who's new to GEC who wants to tell us what they're doing? No. Okay. Well, there being no objections, I think we'll stick with this agenda. Oh, that's lovely.
Do you want me to fix that for you?
Yeah. We're having a problem with the advancing the slides. Hold on a sec. Oh, it reset itself, that's fine. It doesn't usually do that. So I'm sure we can see this one. Just do the slide view on it. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that after I'm done. All right, sorry. Okay, I'm probably going to have to reset this, but I'll let somebody else talk while I'm doing that. So from the last OMIS meeting, we had an open issue which had to do with the recommended use policy. So I'm going to embarrass people now and say, who in the room has read the recommended use policy? Okay. So clearly we have a better outreach job that we need to do.
What was on line number 513-27?
It was an objection to irrelevant questions in our usage policy. So the recommended use policy was discussed in the last OMIS meeting. It's been sent out to the mailing list. I've discussed it with some of the projects individually. It is at the point where if the OMIS group agrees, it's going to advance to be basically Gini policy. There was one outstanding issue from the last discussion, which was there's a statement that says Gini does not allow illegal activities. And the question was, what does that mean? Whose version of illegal does that mean? And the answer, which we got from our legal representative in the GPO, is that it means illegal in the US. So as a project or a service or anybody who's operating on Gini, it's our responsibility when we use Gini to follow that policy.
Under the assumption that all resources owned by Gini itself are in the US?
No, it is not. But all projects that are on Gini operating currently are in the US. Once we're not in that state, then we may have to make it more complicated.
We'll have to go to the UN.
So given that that was the only open issue, there's not actually a change required to the recommended use policy unless anybody else who read it wants to bring up an issue now. Okay. So obviously, as a group, we need to do something to make sure that more people read it. But I'm going to propose that we send it out to all the mailing lists and say, this has gone through OMIS and been discussed, and we'd like to advance it now to be the Gini policy. You look like you're trying to say something.
Well, I'm just wondering if we should make it a point that we're going to review the policy updated, roughly once a year, because I suspect we're going to.
Yes, we should. Actually, this is the very first policy in the entire Gini project that's ever been proposed and discussed and is going to become a policy. So it's the first statement of any sort that's a requirement. Other than things like, if you were funded, you had to do a quarterly report, which isn't really a policy. So, yeah, whatever we can say about what we expect it to happen with it in the future is useful. I'm sorry, I forget your name.
Yes, Camilo.
Okay, here.
Just...
You have to hand the conch. I just didn't give it to Steve because I don't really want to hear what he has to say.
So I had a suggestion. Why don't we put a comma in the U.S. or something that explicitly says what the lawyer said to prevent ambiguities?
So what he said was, don't touch the sentence. But you can put a sort of a fact that goes with it.
Okay.
That says this is in the U.S.
Okay, perfect.
Good question, though. Yes.
So Rob Ritchie from Utah. So one thing that I notice in here is that it says that that researchers who make services available to end users will be responsible for ensuring that their end users don't violate the Gini recommended policies. Most U.S. law, at least with regard to copyright, is that you are in a better position to be not the one responsible for enforcing legality. I mean, so if one of the policies is not performing illegal activities, right, then the way that this is stated, you know, this makes researchers potentially liable for, users in, committing copyright violations or things like this, right? And this seems to go against, you know, the experience. I assume you've read the paper that Larry Peterson wrote about policies on Planet Lab, right? I mean, that seems to go very much against their experience. That seems to be opposite of what their experience, the good policy for the infrastructure is. Interesting.
Policy is if someone reports to Larry that there's been an issue, then he has a responsibility to take action. But it doesn't mean that each of the researchers has a responsibility to snoop on all of the users. So that's kind of the in-practice way that he does it, but the policy says that. It's a very hairy thing, actually, and I, like Steve says, I expect that there will have to be changes to it once we get some more experience of actually running this thing. Okay, sorry, that took more than my 5 minutes, and I'm going to try and reset here while you get started. I know, but you can hopefully say something without slides for a minute. So I can fix this, because I know you have stuff on the left.
Yes, I have important stuff on the left, I think. I went through all of the projects, and I attempted to categorize their level of integration within the cluster that they're part of. In the process, I've discovered that, in fact, some projects are working additionally outside of their cluster, but none of that was a requirement in Spiral 1, so we didn't put anything about it in the table. The presentation describes the information that I put into the table and ends with the table, so most of the discussion is hopefully going to be on the table if we can get to it. It's going to be good. So mine's a PDF. Too high for them. So I'll do a bit of additional administrivia that she's not, which is I'm trying to keep us from getting as far behind as we did last time with over a half an hour's worth of presentations left to go when we ended. So I'm going to try and signal when things are supposed to end, but because of technical difficulties, we've already gotten a bit behind. But hopefully at least one of the discussions will take a little less time than because everybody will be completely swamped up by it. Hey, that looks like my slides. In fact, the left-hand side of my slides. Make it a slideshow. Slideshow. So that's my title and my name, and we don't really need to know that. It was when you touched the cable.
Yeah.
No, your screen on your monitor. Your MacBook has died. Nope, no, it's back now. But it's not up there.
Okay.
Now it's up there.
Sorry.
Now it's in some weird mode.
No,
click the pause.
It's the same.
With the mouse, click.
Yeah.
I didn't click anything. But okay, well, there's my punchline. That's the chart. Okay. So It's still in automatic forward mode.
If you speak fast, it'll work.
Pause. Go back one. Okay. So integration is what's needed to finish up Spiral 1, is to get the things in each cluster working together and operating. And Spiral 1 ends October 1st. People should have a plan in place now. If they don't, they should quick hurry and run for it. And what's trying to happen in almost all cases is getting end-to-end experiments, which is tools if you have them in the cluster, talking to the components of the cluster, and putting together experiments that run across all the substrate, or as many of the substrates as you can set up. And in most cases, I believe in all cases, we're expecting to have layer 3 and layer 2 both appear in experiments. And most of them have wide area connectivity as part of their integration. And documentation is an important part of integration, since there are going to be a lot of new projects coming into each cluster. If you have it written down once, you only have to explain it the one time you write it down. You don't have to explain it to every new project as they come along. That's if you wrote it clearly enough that it actually explains it to them. And so the integration summary that we're presenting here will soon be a wiki page, and there'll be a bit more text for these explanations. So the spreadsheet at the end is to show how each project is integrated within its cluster. There are four different columns, two showing integration in the control plane, that is, that the project communicates with a clearinghouse or has a clearinghouse that communicates with other projects. The second column under the control plane is whether they have aggregate managers, component managers that you can communicate with, or that they have code that communicates with an aggregate manager or a component manager. And then the other two columns are for the experiment plane, where they support layer 2 connections and where they support layer 3 connections. And once this gets to be a wiki page, we can add a few more columns, but four was about the limit for what we could do in a presentation. At each square, we have one of these five colors. Color, if it's green, that means that the project is on track to provide that at the end of Spiral 1. Yellow means needs some work. It means there's a circuit on order that may or may not get installed in time for them to finish, or it's an extra piece of code they weren't required to write, but they hope they have enough time to write it, or something like that. Blue means that they're explicitly not going to do it in Spiral 1. Gray means I have no idea whether they're going to or not. And black is just used to blot out squares that are not applicable at all. You'll see some of those when they get, well, here's the spreadsheet. So if you can read, it's not quite in focus, but if you can find your project on the left hand in the main column there and look at the colors, you should be able to decide whether or not you think they're correct. I've in fact walked around and talked to a number of the PIs at the demo last night, including both PIs that were demoing and some that weren't demoing, and had a few minor corrections, but for the most part, everyone seemed to agree. And if there's anyone who has an objection or a question why some project has some particular designation up there, feel free to ask. No. It is supposed to be that project will do that layer of communication with other projects in the same cluster. So you can set up an experiment with layer 2 communications between them. In some cases, layer 2 is done with a tunnel. It's not physical layer 2. On the wiki page, I'll note which ones are physical and which ones are tunnels. You'll notice the only blues are in layer 2. Some people are just explicitly not doing it.
Yeah.
And most of the yellows are layer two things, too. That's, you know, we're going to do layer three, and we'll get to layer two if we can. Oh yeah, that is kind of obscure. I noticed Cluster D does the same. Cluster D ends up the same way.
Yeah.
I think that's that Orca is prepared to speak layer two to other ones if they ever get, if their yellow gets turned green, they'll talk to them.
Right.
And it's probably the same for you. You could do
right.
layer two tunnels to anyone who comes up and wants to do it. In cluster D?
The cluster B, sorry.
Oh, cluster B.
Planet Lab.
Yeah, because Planet Lab itself doesn't do layer two, but that's the... No, Max and Japini can do layer two internally, and they have a plan for layer two between the two of them.
Right. Through us. Right.
Well, yeah, actually through you. So that's cross-think. Right. Well, I did originally have multiple columns. I actually started with four columns under experiment plane, and I decided that was way too much detail. I think I'm just going to have the two columns, but under layer two, I can put the word tunnel if they're using tunnels rather than native. For the recording.
That's right.
We always forget the first person.
Thank you. So I'm looking at this from a regional network perspective, and the details for the ones that are in yellow, I can go onto the wiki if there's escalations that need to be taken to regional networks. Hopefully they know about it, or if these require attention, that information's there?
Well, it's not there yet.
Okay.
My plan is sometime next week to put this on the wiki, and then that is exactly the kind of additional information that we can have on the wiki. You know, you could click on the box and it would go to something that explains why it's yellow.
Okay.
Post-work
is there supposed to be a ticket if there's an issue like that. So any project that has an issue is supposed to create a ticket. And none of them have done it so far. But I know that there are at least two projects that do have those kind of issues. And so I'm going to start creating tickets for them, but that's not going to work when we have 60 projects. So you look on the wiki, and if you don't see it, let me know, and I'll fix it.
Oh, you're going to go create the tickets. I was going to go send PIs emails and say, there's no ticket for me to link to. Do you have a problem or not? If there's a problem, there should be a ticket. Okay. All right, then we can go on to the next presentation. How do we get the next presentation on your screen? Is there somebody who knows better?
I have to download. Now you tap dance while I download yours.
All right. I don't know any good jokes.
See, this is to encourage them to put their presentations up faster next time. Or earlier.
Mine is both my presentations mixed in together. Wow. Okay. think. There you go. All right. So I also have a table that I'll get to here at the end, but I want to talk about a couple other things that we've been working on. First, maybe. Maybe. Go. I'd like to talk about it, but I can't. No, it wasn't working.
The error button's not working? This is ridiculous. So every other meeting, of course, we've come and run through all the slides in advance and had no problem.
All right, we'll do it this way. So for anybody that didn't see the demo we did last night, one of the things that we have been doing with the data that we've already started integrating is putting it together in some data views. Here's examples of what we've done so far. The big one there is a geographic view of what's up and what's down. You can't really see it at the bottom, but there are buttons for every cluster at the bottom there. And this is showing all, although all really means Planet Lab right now. And there's also some graphing of data, traffic, and memory, and that kind of thing about the components that we have, some logical visualization. That visualization is actually proto-Gini, their topology, and some twisted logical view. And then some of the same kinds of data that we have about components, we have about slices. So we're starting to pull some of this together, and it's just a matter of getting more fleshed out data from everybody. So the strategy up to now has been that we've been talking to the control frameworks for each cluster, trying to gather all the operational data about the projects in that cluster through the control framework projects. So we've been talking to Planet Lab about all the Planet Lab cluster projects, talking to proto-Gini about all the proto-Gini cluster projects, et cetera. And we've done this because we don't want to have 29 long separate discussions about how to get this data from 29 separate projects. Our hope was, you know, maybe we could avoid the effort of talking, having 29 conversations, and maybe they could avoid the effort of 29 different people trying to figure out how to get us this data if they could just get this data to the control framework. But as you could tell from our visualization, we don't actually have that much yet. So we're kind of changing our way of looking at it now. Instead of looking at talking to the control frameworks, we're thinking about picking kind of example projects, picking the projects that typify a certain type of technology or a certain type of Gini project. So we're already talking to some control frameworks about their particular projects, but maybe talking to projects like Max that are contributing network infrastructure. They already have a way of checking what's up and what's down, and we have an established relationship there. You know, it's probably easier for us to just talk to them directly rather than trying to work through Planet Lab. And the same might be true for, like, wireless projects, sensors, or some of these server node kind of programmable node projects. So right now what we're looking for are specific friendly projects that are interesting. In other words, there's something that's going up and down, something that's actually operating that we want to look at, a project that's interested in giving us the data, and people that can get this data to us easily, so it's not a major effort to get it to us. And then we can use this to kind of figure out what the easiest way is, what the best structure is for the data, and apply that to other projects of similar types. One other interesting thing that we're working on, I think is pretty exciting, is integrating and starting to think about federating operational data beyond Gini. So we actually have a solicitation to proposal, which is a joint proposal between the U.S. and Korea to start working together to look at international federation of the data. So not only collecting data from within Gini, but then how does Gini export or import that data beyond Gini itself? So, which one is it? There it is. So we're looking at what's the best model there. This brings a new layer of federation to the already complicated layer of federation that we have. So if GMOC has pointers to all this operational data or has all this data, how do we decide what to export or what to import from other similar kinds of networks in other countries? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There could be privacy. There could be legal, some security stuff that we need to think about, and just again, we have a format issue, so can't expect everybody to use the same format there either. So do you develop some sort of international broker that translates this data and filters this data between the two, or do you expect one of the two projects to kind of use whatever format the other project is using? So hopefully we'll look into that and actually make some progress on figuring out what's the best way to do that. I mentioned DVNOC here, which is an interesting project that's already exists for the GLORIAD network. It's a distributed virtual NOC, and they've already done a lot of work on this kind of federating NOCs. So hopefully we can leverage some of that and leverage some of the work that we've done on GMOC and really come up with some good ideas for international federation. So that's that. And then finally is our version of the color coding table. In my case, it's a similar spirit of coloring here. So green is things that we're actively getting. Yellow are things that we're getting some of that particular category, but not all. Red, it would be anybody that said, we're not going to give that to you. we don't have any of those. Blue in this case is, yeah, we'd like to give that to you, but we can't yet. We don't have the data, or we don't have the time to work out how to give it to you yet. Gray are people we haven't talked to, and black are people that this just doesn't apply to. So you can see there's a lot of gray, first of all, and that has to do with the strategies that we talked about before that you can see where there's not gray, it's kind of at the top of each cluster. So we were talking to those projects, and we've gotten somewhere there, but we haven't talked kind of below that level.
Can you write out your columns? I can't read them, so that...
Yeah, so these columns, I was going to get to that. The columns here are related to each of the, we have our required, our common operational data set document, and it lays out the data that we want into these types. So the types are topology information, operational status, utilization measures, which is traffic levels, condition measures, which is error levels, and then specialized data, which would be things that don't easily fit in any of the other categories. So those are the basic categories we're looking at there. A lot of gray, a lot of blue from people that say, yeah, we'll get that to you as soon as we can. Some yellow, you can see we've got some yellow from Protogenie, who's giving us some topology information, but it's static. It's not a full topology or dynamic topology. And then we're getting a little bit more from...
Don't touch anything. It takes a second for the pressure to go.
Come on. And then Planet Lab. So obviously with this, slightly altered strategy here, we'll have hopefully some more blues and yellows and greens from some of these other projects once we make those connections. And we started to do that already. So, anybody want to throw any stones at that? Nobody has an opinion.
All right.
Yeah, I know. I'll assume it's all correct then. Yes. But in some cases, I think it's also clear the control framework might never want to have this kind of data about all those projects. That might just not be something they care about.
I mean, it's promising that the rows that you really worked on, the control framework headers, you have them completely filled out and haven't put down right yet.
Yeah. I mean, some of these blues are sooner than... some of these blues are more likely to go yellow than others in the near term, but yes. I guess I could slightly tinge the blue.
They're interested as opposed to yelling at you and saying,
it's, yes. There are no reds, which we don't want to see. Okay. Steve? See if you have any better luck.
You've got to be kidding. Known for crashing all things. So. Okay. Talk for a moment. Hi, I'm Steve Schwab from Cobham Analytical Services, formerly Sparta, and many other names, TIS. We've been playing the role of security architects in the first year of Spiral 1, more or less, by ourselves. So it's good to know that there's a number of other security projects that will be getting started in Spiral 2, because in truth, there is much more work related to security in Genie than just a couple of us who've been working on this can do. A lot of the information I've got in this slide deck was prepared by Alifia Hussein, who works with me in the lab. Okay, so outline of this talk, and this is a very brief sort of advertisement talk. Genie security architecture, the plans on updates for the document, and hopefully people will read it and provide some feedback. It's certainly the kind of thing where getting a document out there to describe the current state of the world is nice. It'd be even better if people would read it, provide us comments, including where things aren't clear. It can be very difficult for those of us who have had our brains wrapped up in Planet Lab and Genie for, you know, 5+ years now to see where outsiders will get lost in the details when we just start up, you know, with a document that's supposed to be self-contained. So it is very useful to have people read and point out things to us. Genie clusters and Project IVA status chart. This is represents my view of the world from talking to control framework PIs and a few individuals around here. Hopefully that status chart will be maybe become institutionalized and updated over the course of the project. So it's probably a good idea to try to keep track of this. This is certainly a first attempt. Clusters, I'll just briefly flip up some charts. This deck has a great deal of information about the current as-built control framework security implementations, which is worth understanding if you're going to be integrating into the control frameworks. It's probably worth looking at, and hopefully we will fine-tune that documentation. And then I'm just going to make some security comments on a couple of the other notable projects that beyond the cluster frameworks themselves, which have some security issues which are popping up. Okay, so Genie security architecture. We have a revised document posted on the Genie wiki. It includes a bunch of the information in this slide deck as well as text. The biggest change is to try to capture, as I said, the state of the control frameworks, what they've built. There's at least one more revision coming in August for this year, and then we'll probably wait until sometime in March for a subsequent revision. Okay, security chart. So my chart is loosely based on Mike's, though I've just got two columns for clearinghouse and component manager, aggregate manager, where we try to capture the state of what's going on in the frameworks, and then a notional idea of where these guys are going in Spiral 2. So, and I've broken it down, you know, the first set tied up there is the deter tied cluster, then the Planet Lab grouping, the Protogenie grouping, and I think Rob's snuck out already, and Orca and Ben, and then the Orbit WiMAX. So this chart, like I said, represents my view of where things are. But the key thing is TIDE is pursuing their federation using an ABAC technology. So this is a working existing technology that they've been able to demo. Planet Lab is basically implementing the slice-based facility architecture using Genie wrappers. And essentially all of the projects in that cluster, their security is all hidden behind that interface. So they are essentially using that interface in a pretty pure way. However, if you look at Enterprise Genie, they have these routers that run OpenFlow. And they basically trust the Planet Lab clearinghouse to tell them what to do. So you authenticate to the Planet Lab clearinghouse, and then you send commands on essentially through that. Go ahead.
I need the conch.
You need the conch.
I was in the Planet Lab cluster meeting earlier,
And that exact question was being discussed, and they came up with a slightly different architecture. So you may want to look back at what happened in that meeting.
Okay. Well, moving target. So the key thing here is that there is clearly a needs work for not for this spiral, where in truth just getting it working is the right thing, but for the subsequent spiral, there's a missing fine grain control, and the problem doesn't even arise until you have a couple different Planet Lab control frameworks that are federated with different Enterprise Genie OpenFlow boxes hidden underneath them, and now you have no mechanisms for distinguishing what should be done on one versus the other because it's all just trusted at the top level. So in some sense, we're going to start seeing where do we have mechanisms in place that secure something that will work, and where are we going to run out of the usefulness of those mechanisms for the controlling the things we want to do. And we'd like to figure out what they need to do 6 months before they hit that end of the road with their technology versus 6 months afterwards. And that's going to become a problem. Protogenie looks pretty good. They're federating mostly Emulabs with different flavors of security. So essentially it's a hierarchy of Emulabs in some sense with a clearinghouse at the top. And it's essentially also following pretty closely the slice-based facility architecture. However, it's a slightly different interpretation of how to implement some of the mechanisms. And so it's worth looking at the details. Orca Ben is following very much Scirocco ticket-based scheme, still following closely the architecture, though with a different interpretation. And right now, it's clear that the component groups in the clusters are just plugged in. It's not clear if they're going to do specialized security later in the next phase. So. And Orbit right now doesn't really have any particular security mechanism other than authentication right now in Spiral 1. And in truth, they probably didn't need any because they were essentially allocating an entire wireless test bed to a user at a time. So there wasn't a need. But from talking to Max, they will be doing something in Spiral 2. Whether that will be more Shibboleth-like or more ABAC-like is sort of still up in the air. But they'll certainly be rolling out a fine-grained mechanism, especially as they get their WiMAX stuff in place, they're going to need it. So they know they need it. It'll probably be there roughly just about in time. Okay, so let me flip on so I don't want to take... So I'm going to really quickly go through these slides. I'm just going to show a couple pictures because I don't want to spend half an hour briefing them. So Planet Lab Cluster B, for each of these clusters, there's sort of an identity and authentication piece, so a diagram of what the steps are in setting things up. And then there's a slice creation piece, which walks through the sequence of steps involved in going from a request for a slice through all the machinery, the aggregate managers and slice authorities, to the end of the cycle where there's actually a slice that's now been established. And the key takeaway here is the set of abstractions. You really need to understand the set of abstractions that are in the slice-based facility architecture, and then look at what is being done in each control framework very closely if you're going to integrate, because the devil's in the details here, and I don't want to try to drill down on those details, but we've tried to capture those as-built details from just the security point of view in the security architecture, so you can look there and see just what's being done from a security point of view, abstracting away everything else. Okay, so there's Protogenie has essentially a different way of accomplishing the same sort of authenticate, check your authorizations, get a ticket, redeem a ticket, create a slice, except now that slice is not on Planet Lab nodes. It's on a set of these Emulabs that are distributed across the various campuses. Flipping forward, Orca Ben is a much more of a ticket-based scheme, so there's a notion of a broker clearinghouse. There's identity. Now, one of the things that's in this slide deck, the Orca guys were going to use Shibboleth as their identity provider. I don't believe that's happened yet in Spiral 1. Yeah, but they're on track, I think, to do that. I'll double check. But this is important because it's besides the strong hints, there's actually an important thing in figuring out how can we do scalable identity management in Genie, and we need a couple different technologies at least to do this, because we really want I think we want some alternative technology options on the table. So we've probably got one in SHIB. It's probably important to look around out there for other scalable ways of identifying our growing population of researchers so we have some alternatives, because I suspect there's places where Shibboleth is not going to do the job, and we're going to want another technology to look at. So I'm just pointing out a hole in the sense that I don't see a second technology that's readily getting explored yet. Deter Tide, just flipping through, there is another set of complicated mechanisms which create a somewhat different this is not quite a slice-based facility architecture. Nevertheless, it provides sort of a complementary set of mechanisms for creating federated experiments on a set of Emulabs. And I suspect that this will plug into both Protogeni and Planet Lab clusters in a sort of bridging way, and perhaps Orca as well. So we may see this technology play a complementary role for translating between other frameworks, which it's clear we're going to have that sort of problem. We're going to need a translation role. Orbit hasn't done anything yet, but they're on track to adopt something in Spiral 2. Okay. I got about 3 minutes? Okay, fine. So other notable projects. So Enterprise Genie, they offload all their security mechanisms onto a controller. So they have all these routers deployed potentially on campus networks, and there are going to be quite a number of these deployments because they've got multiple vendors supporting their stuff. It'll be possible to acquire and deploy this. The key thing is that the security properties are all in the boxes that you connect to that are off switch, off of the routers. So that gives an opportunity for projects to plug in separate security mechanisms, which is good. Whether those are clearinghouses, aggregate managers, or something else remains to be seen, but there's probably a great deal of flexibility. It's probably the case that there should be experimental boxes that are controllers for Enterprise Genie so that you can actually have researchers load experimental code, whether those are Planet Lab slices, Emulab nodes, something else. There's probably room here for something very experimental. Digital Object Registry folks, they had a poster, a little bit of a demo yesterday. One of the key things here is that their ability to search for identities means they can probably provide generalized search over multiple clearinghouses. And this is going to probably turn out to be, I'm speculating, but important as we're going to have multiple clearinghouses for the long term. It's a technology that you might want to look at in terms of can you plug in, provide them with information, because it'll help with searching to find things. And finding things in Genie is going to be rapidly become a problem because we've got all these heterogeneous systems. We can't put the information in one place. We're not going to have a single standard implementation of anything. So searching and finding stuff is going to become the challenge. They can probably do it. They can certainly do it with authorization integrity. So we know that the records you get back are the ones that were originally in the system. Million Node Genie currently plugging into the Planet Lab cluster, I believe, or Protogeni cluster, doesn't really matter, but they're not plugged in yet. Million Node Genie runs on desktops, individual machines. It's a language-based VM, like some of the things we saw in ActiveNets, except this implementation is a restricted Python implementation with then some other mechanisms to control where traffic will flow. Those other mechanisms are phase two, restricted Python to limit what can be done by an experimenter loading Python code on these desktop machines is their current phase one implementation. So this is a complementary sort of set of security mechanisms because they're not running on boxes that belong in the Genie infrastructure proper. They're running on boxes out there potentially in the opt-in part of the campus or internets or wherever. They pose a different set of challenges for assurance. How do we know their mechanisms work? But also for just the model of how does this fit into a Genie control framework? What does it mean to allocate on, you know, one or 1,000 or a million of the million node Genie cluster? Because in truth, this is much more pushed to the edge. So we've got, we already have a project which in some sense is going to break our model, and that's expected. How we take advantage of the security mechanisms they build to use in other places is interesting. We could potentially run Million Node Genie again inside other experimental slices and use it to control things because we want to control what our researchers or users of our slices do inside experiments as well. So there's room for using this again at a different level. If a researcher is running an experimental slice and wants to provide some programmability to their end users, here's a mechanism we already have Perhaps we should consider how we can take advantage of that to let slices protect themselves from their users who might be taking advantage of new services. Okay, I'm going to leave just three questions. I think I'm basically out of time. What mechanisms, plural, should we be using for identity and authentication? We've got at least one on the table. We've got all the ones we've inherited from our clusters. Second, what mechanisms should we be using for policy creation, definition, and distribution? Fine-grained authorization is not going to do us any good, and I've been down this path many times. The fine-grained authorization machinery can be built. The hard thing is going to be getting the individuals running the various control frameworks or the various aggregates to be able to define policies that are actually useful. And as we're biting off the, we're already into the international cross-federation world. It's the policies that are going to become the management bottleneck. How do you specify the policies in a way that can be exchanged? What should we be sharing? We probably need at least two policy representation projects so we have something to work from. I probably got one in hand, but we're probably going to need at least one more. And these policies have to be rich enough to express things about stuff in Genie. And stuff in Genie is not like a node in Planet Lab or a node in Emulab. We've got very complicated resources between the wide area networks and the end system. So we're going to need somewhat richer policy mechanisms than we're used to. And then last thing, should we be focused from a Genie security point of view on the stuff that's going to be built in the out years or the stuff that we have up and running right now? Because increasingly there's going to be pressure, I believe, to secure the stuff that's as built as opposed to looking over the horizon to where things are going. And that's going to shape the way security mechanisms get integrated into the system. So that's probably a question for the community to continue to debate as we go forward. Okay. And with that, I'm going to turn this back to
discussion. I think Mike's good.
Yes. What I was going to say, John, did you say you had some slides on movies to check out?
Yes, I did.
First discussion.
Unless there are questions.
Unless somebody has a pointed question for Steve.
Yeah. Well, and please do read the current draft of the document and provide comments. We would certainly like to make it more useful to other folks coming in to the Genie project who, have not been to meetings, haven't had a chance to talk to people one-on-one, but would still like to understand what's really been built there. So go ahead.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So everybody heard Chip say in the plenary session how experiments are really important and campus deployments are really important and getting things used in the next year, more heavily is really important. So as a security guy, now that you've reviewed everything and you think about that happening next year, does it give you nightmares?
No, so the reality of looking at what's been built and considering we're going to struggle with most network test beds, we're going to struggle to get users to jump in and make use of it because it's a significant investment in time and energy for somebody to bring their whatever their research is out of their lab and onto one of these test beds, whether it's Planet Lab, the Proto-Genie infrastructure, the Deter infrastructure, or Orca. And so even though we're going to try to ramp up a huge number, we're probably going to see a modest number in the next year. And the reality is that each of these test beds has sufficient security mechanisms that they start with, that for the numbers of researchers we're going to have, which we're probably going to be recruiting, pulling people in for meetings, I don't think we're going to get too far ahead of ourselves in terms of having random, quote, researchers from out there, coming out of the woodwork using our facilities to set up slices. In truth, we won't see problems with the platform until we have enough users that there's people who are Genie users who aren't really personally known to any of the control frameworks or projects till we get to that order of 1,000 kind of researcher size, or until we get to the point where researchers are running things in slices experimentally that then attract internet or campus users who are not associated with Genie in any way and attract enough of them that we start getting malicious code attacks, that kind of thing. And Genie is still, it's interesting to us. It's not big enough to present a target for botnet herders or other folks for still a little while. So we're going to have a honeymoon period for at least, I think, another year or so. And by then, we'll have enough operational data and enough sense of where our security mechanisms are. I don't think we'll get too far behind in that regard. It's the stuff we haven't thought of that's going to kill us. So inevitably. Okay, so I'm going to turn over to...
Are his other slides on here?
Yeah, they're
in that same
room. It's the same set of slides.
Maybe the button will work then.
Oh, I'm sure. All right, so this is really a conversation starter. So one of the things that's been talked about and talked about and talked about is the idea of needing some kind of big kill switch for Genie. And this is something that fits in pretty heavily in our project, figuring out how to do it or what's a good way to think about it. And we're starting to go down that route. So hopefully as a conversation starter, we'll see how this goes. But here's an idea that we have, which is pretty, I think, pretty minimal, pretty straightforward way to start thinking about emergency shutdown without being onerous on the Federation model or on projects in Genie. Like who are the people in the room that will care about?
What side of the Genie ecosystem do you expect to be? You know, people deploying the experimental Genie substrate at their sites, or folks who are going to be running their experiments in slices, or just interested parties? Because it sort of affects.
You could be more than one of those. You could have church infrastructure on your site and run experiments that use all of them. How many people expect to be experimenters using Genie? Nobody's going to use Genie. Well, it's really easy to build.
It's not going to be the operation.
No, it's too early.
Yeah. Most of us are coming into the Genie project from building the ground up. So some of us will do some experimentation to get there. But the experimenters are not here for seeing this Genie in general. Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised to find that I expected that experimenters was going to be the smallest one, but I did expect that there would be one or two people who would raise their hand. So how many people are actually expecting to be contributing substrates or components or networking resources? 4 or 5.
So that's probably the, yeah. So this is the...
And,
campuses. How many campuses?
Well.
Okay, so a few.
You can count it.
It's about the same number, but a different set. Not an orthogonal set.
It's mostly the people who have resources
interested in being here. Not surprising. Right. And it's clear this is not a representative sample. Everybody at GC.
Can I comment on the experimenter side? I think we need to somehow figure out a way, as a community, as an engineering community, figure out a way to get the masses out to the rest of the networking researchers available with
the message.
Facility.
What?
The message to the rest of the researchers.
What I was trying to say is that as a Genie community who are working on different pieces to get it from grounds up to get it going, we need to somehow make the rest of the networking research community aware of the experimental facility and how they can use it. Because if we don't give some clues about how they can use it, it will be another 2 years before they use it. So, you know, that defeats another purpose, probably, in some sense.
Open for business message.
Yeah, correct. Somehow that needs to be crafted, and we need to make a concerted effort in that regard.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And
Right. I mean, Chip alluded to it a little bit in his talk, and it was in sort of in Vint's talk, too. And the other thing there is a fair amount of lead time. Even though we don't have something built yet that they can run their experiment on, a lot of them need to know that there will be something, because what they want is incentive to submit a proposal for funding to run an experiment. And that has a lead time to it as well. And if they can be reasonably convinced that, you know, in 9 months there will be something really good that they could run an experiment on that they couldn't otherwise get funding for, that, you know, we can get some to start submitting proposals to use Genie, whether that's from, you know, through some sort of the same proposal or just through completely independent funding agencies. And I think that needs to have a lot of lead time, because funding often has problems like that.
But that's what I got to
love. Where do we go from there? So on a completely separate topic. I emergency shutdown is one of these ideas. It doesn't directly play into what we've just been talking about, but it is something that, putting my real networking hat back on, something that you hear a lot in that community, which is I'm not going to interconnect this thing with me unless I know that it's not going to break me, unless I know that it's going to stay up. And not cause some problems. So coming into this emergency shutdown, you can think of it in the ideal way. You can think of the elegant way that all of this could work in a genie-wide fashion, or you can try to think about what's the basics that we need right now. And that's kind of where I'm coming from here. So my idea is, what if you just start small? Don't do anything really automated. Don't do some long, convoluted process. Just concentrate on a few simple things that you might need to help coordinate Genie projects. Once you have a slice that goes between clusters, especially, or once you have any of these opt-in kinds of deals, come up with a few simple things that you can do so that if something goes drastically bad on a slice, that you can get it shut down quickly. So the three things that I'm suggesting here would be just coordinating how to handle all the contacts, getting in touch with the right people to do the right thing at the right time, a real straightforward, simple expectation for what people will do when you get one of these situations, and a big axe that you can wield if it really comes down to it. So if you look at it from a simple flow, it might look something like this. So you have an issue that's reported, so no fancy detection needed right now, no automated something's gone awry, we need to do something kind of thing, but someone just reports it. Say someone reports that a slice is using more than it's supposed to, or a slice is running on their infrastructure that they don't think is supposed to be, something along those lines. That leads into this, what I call a kill request, which will lead into a process to just find the related projects that are part of whatever you're trying to kill. If there's a slice that you think you need to kill, either just because it's hung or because it's causing a problem, you need to find out what are the things related to that slice, what are the pieces that it's running through to send this emergency shutdown into. Then there's this kind of question. Is this a destabilizing event? Is this something that's causing general instability for a facility outside of it, or is it just causing problems on the particular slice? If it's just a problem on the slice, obviously that's a far different matter. That's not really an urgent kind of thing, or it's not going to cause anybody big headaches. But if something has gone wrong, and the resource allocation mechanisms or firewalls between resources, virtualized resources, then maybe you have to isolate it.
What do you mean by isolate it here?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
that's the big axe if you really need it, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So the next step would be to look up who the contact is, have some designated set of contacts for people for a request like this to go to, either within each control framework or within each aggregate, depending on how you want to slice that. Shutdown isn't performed centrally. That's would end up being performed out at the, the people actually providing the resources would do the shutdown, either through a clearinghouse or some other mechanism. Then if you previously isolated after it's been shut down, obviously you re-enable its connections and somehow have a process back to confirm that everything has been shut down as planned. So the contacts part of that, we're just talking about everybody gives us an email address and a phone number and a mapping between if there's a problem on a slice that runs over these things, you contact this person or this organization. Nothing to it. Response expectations, obviously, there's a lot to think about here. There are lots of different scenarios where you might want to trigger one of these kill requests. You could just have somebody that says, my slice, I can't get to it. Or there's a piece of it that should be gone and it's not. It's still sitting out there like a zombie, getting rid of that part. That's obviously much different than a situation which is causing a disruption of the overall facility. So you have different expectations on how people will respond and how quickly and how urgent the matter is there. And then to get to your isolation point, one of the things you can fall back on is you have this interconnection glue. Specifically, I mentioned I2 and NLR here. That won't apply to everybody, but it's a good place to look that if you really need to cut somebody off and there's no other way to do it, you can turn off those connections. There's no special, that's the reason that it's in here, is there's no special technical or authorization issue here other than Genie deciding that this is a good idea to do or setting what any Genie authorization process that you want to have. Right.
It's the same people.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking about what, so that once you've taken off the I2 or NRL wide area networks, then pretty much individual cluster component manager or active manager, write those test bins. They have to shut down their own resources anyways. They already have people to do that for Planet Lab or Proto-Genie or Deterra Orca. So I guess the question is what else is in the list? Like what other wide area networks might be. I'm mostly worried about somebody having a misbehaving slice, saturating something,
right,
and causing a larger scale disruption outside of Genie.
Yep. You could be worried, say, there are these switches that they're putting in for Proto-Genie on the I2 network, right? What if something destabilizes those switches, and that's taking down not just Proto-Genie, but other projects that are actually going to end up using those switches as well.
Or I think by the same token, if Genie ends up connecting to commodity internet, we need a similar control point there where we can use some more isolation.
And in fact, two of the projects in Spiral 1 are about interconnecting Genie to the main network. So those are interconnect points like the I2 and NLR ones, but in that case, the operations people on the other side of that disconnect point are not the same operations people. They're a different group.
Sure.
Now they're probably not people unknown to.
But there are two ends to that connection, right? So you can shut it down on either one.
One of the projects is interconnecting to multiple ISPs.
Right.
So I guess I am having a hard. So assuming those junipers, which will have open flow that are in the I2 backbone.
Yep.
Right. So, so the worst thing they could do is, they DOS some I2 links somehow. And they take out Internet 2, POPs essentially. So what happens if Internet 2 goes down? I mean, right?
Well, I don't. That won't happen the way that it's. I mean, I2 is only giving a separate dedicated piece of their network precisely for that reason, right? There's no way you can take down the Internet 2 IP network that I know of. Famous last words.
Yeah.
If there was an interconnection, there could be like a fully saturated outbound link.
Yeah.
Which then
depending on how big the links are. Yeah.
So the reality is it can only suck up some bandwidth on I2. It can't really take up the I2 production.
I mean, if it started filling the I2 backbone, that's an outage scenario to in Internet 2's view. Which
right,
means
they're not
shut it
wait
down.
For Genie to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can shut that down themselves.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
So.
They, meaning us, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You'll shut that down, and then you'll call yourself and say, we shut down.
Yeah, we have a lot of call yourself situations. But, so I guess your question is there a case within Genie where you need to do this? Is that what you're getting at? When would you ever have that? Yes, this is disruptive enough that we want to cut one part of Genie off from another part.
Yeah. I mean, a campus that's running an open flow router network, those routers, they'll shut them down or turn that off locally. I imagine exactly the same way you shut down IP2.
A disruptive interconnection might not go through IP2. It might end up being two campuses that are connected to the same regional and the traffic never actually makes it up to I2. It just goes through that regional to the other campus, and this campus says, they're disrupting us, cut them off, or shut them down. There's another interconnect point there.
But you could imagine a situation where there's a slice where one part is flooding, not a point-to-point slice. Think of a multi-point kind of situation here, and you've got one point in that multi-point that's flooding all the others. Might be a situation in that case where you want to cut off the guy that's flooding everybody else at the head end rather than at the other ends.
Now, one thing we, I think, need to clearly understand about I2 is that depending on the connectivity, you can get the quote-unquote the public I2, or you can get a circuit-level I2, because I2 provides both functionality. So if you're connecting two different networks, if we're doing through VLAN, it's not going to affect the public I2 at all. So we have to... that's possible, but I just wanted to make that sure, because some of them may want to do over VLAN, for example, because of the bandwidth guarantee, as an example, for Genie project. So they are not going to necessarily affect it. Or this dynamic circuit switching or something like that.
Yeah, that was the point I was making before, which is that I2 gave waves partly for that reason, so that this isn't disruptive to anything else I2 does, although a lot of projects are using GRE tunnels and other things like this that are going to ride over, potentially over the I2 IP network, and there's nothing to stop those tunnels from pushing 10 gig or something like that and filling the backbone.
So our experience in Deter connecting just the Berkeley and ISI locations was as soon as we were allocated a gigabit tunnel, as soon as somebody started using a significant fraction of that gigabit, the campus operation at ISI Berkeley started to complain and we were using the bandwidth. So mm-hmm. Any significant fraction, it's noticeable somebody will complain that we're actually using the bandwidth that was allocated.
Yeah.
Because maybe that won't happen too much on I2, but we can expect complaints of the form. Well, you have 300 meg flows now, and we'll be like, yeah, the experiment is.
Yeah. And I think this kind of isolation thing can happen at multiple levels, right? Centralized isolation is a very big step to take or major thing to try, so it's only in the most drastic cases. In most cases, it'd be like what you're talking about, where a campus or a regional would see something that was somehow hurting them and shut it off themselves.
Yeah,
and that There's no need for that to be centralized. Centralizing is only, Gini-wide isolation is only important if it's destabilizing to Gini-wide, Gini as in a large scale. So. No, I don't. So anyway.
So we're probably going to see this in the next 3 to 6 months, right? Things are integrated enough that we're going to start to see traffic flowing between over at least the toy experiments over that. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we'll be talking more to various groups about this idea.
So if we're done with Kill, then we don't actually have...
Yeah.
Do you want to do the next one?
Well, so we have two other discussion topics. I think we only have time for one. So why don't we see the people in the room?
Yeah. Already, in my brain, I've already deleted it.
Okay.
The time schedule.
All right.
Saying that we're on time. So
who was going to lead the second one?
Next one was about data. The two candidates for who's going to lead it are talking to one another and not paying attention to me. So the next topic was on the data sharing when the data is not all in one place. Does either of you want to lead that discussion?
Well, let's check first to see if the people in the room even want to have it.
Okay.
Because I don't want to lose the opportunity to get your comments and feedback if you're here. So the other discussion we wanted to have was as campus people and as substrate providers, you have data that you could make available to Gini experimenters and Gini operations and possibly just interested people who aren't operations. And the question is there anything like that that you'd want to do? Would you be interested in being on the other side of it, of being a consumer of that kind of data? You know, would you want to be able to see for the people who are doing experiments that have slices on your campus, where are they connecting to? And if so, then we have to think about how to do some data sharing. We have to figure it out in OMIS anyway, because we have to do data sharing to do operations. But we've had a few discussions where we tried to figure out, is it worth trying to do anything more general and bigger than that? Or do we just look at our own belly buttons and worry about operations people sharing data and not worry about campuses or people who have other substrates? So I'd like to get input from the people who are here about whether they would find that useful at all or whether it's not that interesting. So do you have all the data you need when you just look at your own local resources so that you wouldn't need to look off in Gini and see what else was going on in Gini?
And the problem is maybe a premature question. Necessary
yep.
until people start
right.
using the systems.
So it looks like there's no great nervousness about it yet. And so if we're not going to get input from the room, I don't think we need to sit here and discuss it in front of everybody.
Well, I was going to say, there's the other side of the question, which is, if we didn't have any experimenters. So the other side of the question is, as user of Gini, are you interested in going to one place to ask about, how the parts of your experiment are working? The experiment is spread out over Gini, so then there has to be some way to interact to who do you get the data from for the various parts of your experiment. But we don't have experimenters who can tell us what they really
okay,
want.
Okay, well, I don't think it's worth having a design discussion about
that
then.
And
yep.
The
no, I don't. They're both related.
Yeah, they're both related.
And there's not any interest in either of them. Yeah, I think we'll have Jen do the lightning talk. And unless anyone else wants to stand up and say, any other discussion they wanted to have while they were here with operations and security folks on hand. Okay.
You don't have slides.
I don't have slides.
It's okay. Heidi promised me I didn't have to have slides.
All right.
All right, Carmen.
Good, thank you. Knowing that I'm withstanding in between you and the end of the day, I'll make this very quick, even faster than lightning if I can. I just want to introduce myself. I'm Jen Leisure with The Quilt. And for those of you that don't know, The Quilt is a membership organization made up of 30 regional and state research and education networks. And they play an important part as the middle tier in our nation's three-tier infrastructure from the campus through a regional aggregator onto one of the national backbones. So have you heard about the NLR donations and the Internet 2 donations for the Genie program? And so as you start to go and establish your most likely layer 2 connections, I think is what's happening among the project sites, likely you'll need to involve a regional or state network to help make those connections and reach one of those backbones. So if you have any questions regarding establishing those types of connections, finding a contact for your regional or state network associated with your campus, please let me know. Heidi also has this information, so feel free to contact her or to contact me. But we, the regional and state networks, we have a working group. We meet monthly, tracking Genie projects and progress. So we have been interested in tracking the progress of the different projects and are ready and available to assist when we can in supporting the Genie program. Thank you.
So we'll post the audio and the notes from this meeting on the wiki if you want to check it out later or send it to other people who couldn't come. And thank you all for attending and your good questions. Thanks.